This is Iconic.
This is part two of our interview with Cody and the other cast members of the official Pelgrane 13th Age Twitch stream.
So let me ask you this. For those of us who are in listeners to Iconic who have never actually tuned in to see your game, can you give us an overview of the campaign? What it's about, kind of what's been going on so far? Like, if you were going to do a recap, what would that look like?
Yeah, I can give like the high level overview, and maybe my players can chime in on things that they would like to note. But it was really structured as like, you know, just like how character levels are, you know, adventure, champion, and heroic or epic tier. I forget which epic tier. I had, you know, what's the plot for the, you know, low tier and the mid tier and high tier. So low tier was the dwarves and elves are at it again. Something's happened, they're at war, and the party's going to have to, you know, either decide to pick a side or work with the Empire to try to broker a peace. They try to broker a peace, doesn't go particularly well. They get framed for a murder. Mid part of the campaign...
That murder thing is a little tricky of a topic.
It is, but... You know, it turns out one of the players who no longer is with us wanted to be the bad guy. So that's how it went. Mid part of the campaign is the Eyes of the Stone Thief. So the Stone Thief is back at it again. It's being wielded by these various forces. It grew and grew as a threat. The party saw it first and tried to get all these icons to drop their war and fight against it. And they're like, well, no, we're not going to stop fighting just because of some random threat. And then it finally grows big enough to strike at Shadowport. And now they've managed to broker a peace, resolving, you know, the first part of the campaign a bit and the mid part of it. They're looking to wrap up that, hopefully slay the Stone Thief, and then move to the late part of the campaign where the Great Ghoul, a fallen icon from Bestiary 2, has been finagling everything in the background in order to fuel death and bodies to empower him once more. Sounds like, wait, I'm taking notes, all right?
This is news to me. Yeah, I kind of lost the plot a while back.
Half of this stuff I wasn't there for, so.
Yeah, the stream. I think starts, I'm trying to remember, I think the stream starts just...
Stream starts like just before we get into the Stone Thief for guards.
Yeah.
So when you think about that as the overarching story arc, you know, you've got the adventure tier, the champion tier, and the epic tier kind of, you know, penciled in at least. Paints a really good kind of overview. What's a central story that's kind of taking your characters... journey through this arc. When you talk about trying to broker peace between the dwarves and the elves, I mean, what does that look like in the actual creating of the story at the table?
To give some insight on that, we had our first attempt, which was actually why the dame was introduced into the party to begin with. She was going to perform at the elf queen's court. She succeeded at that. It was an attempt to, you know, have a cultural sharing and ease tensions until who was it that got assassinated?
Like the Minister of Agriculture or something.
Hey, that's a very important role.
Yeah, well, the point is, he got murdered.
During the performance.
And amusingly enough, this is one of the few sessions I ended up missing, which ended up having a perfect little segue for Leanne to get involved and clear their names. Which did end up getting the party out of trouble, but the murderer got away with it as well because of that. And the attempt failed there. And then way down the line, when the Stone Thief is finally getting involved, due to the threat of it, we were able to have a meeting of various representatives of the icons and discuss a matter on how to handle the Stone Thief, as well as, thanks to the Emperor, get a temporary ceasefire, at least until the Stone Thief itself is dead.
Basically, I feel like most of what we've been doing, so very, very early on in the campaign, Cody told us about the existence of phase spiders, which we all decided was a horrifying thing for your average person to have to deal with in a world. And so as we've been going along, we've just been trying to make the world a little bit better. And then the Stone Thief happened, and we figured out we actually have a way to kill it. And so it was like, look, guys, this is a problem that we can actually genuinely make go away. We can't do anything about the existence of phase spiders, but we can get rid of the stone thief. And that's kind of been the guiding principle.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. A lot of it has been sort of this cat and mouse between the party, the cult of the devourer, if that came out okay, the cult of the devourer, just going this back and forth for a while, trying to secure the eye, scrambling really with forces that were sort of backed by the Great Ghoul, as it turns out, to stop it from being used as a weapon, stop it from sort of getting its own reins, world-ending threat. And, you know, we kind of just had the last piece of the puzzle. And yeah, it's gotten to a point where the decisive actions were just being made, and then by lizard folk was poked to death.
We've also had a lot of opportunities in between these larger kind of plot points to explore things that are important to our characters, which was really awesome. You know, each character kind of has had their own arc, which is why we've been playing for 3 years, just because sometimes we get a little bit, lost from the plot and have to kind of move back. But having that opportunity to kind of explore each character's motives and how, you know, what they're doing and how they're connected to the icons affects the larger campaign has also just, you know, been a really cool way to feel like, you know, my character, my fake character in this fake universe is a real person in this real fake universe.
Now, I may have missed it because I was trying to deal with it. I apologize with some technical issues we're having on our end, but what level are you guys all at right now?
We are 7?
Yes.
Right before Epic Tier.
Yeah, they'll hit level 8 in probably another 2 sessions.
Awesome.
Talking about characters, one question I asked everyone at the very start of the campaign is, as a character, why is their character leaving the safety of the walls of the cities? Why are they venturing out into a world with phase fighters and giants and orcs and stone thieves and great ghouls? Which I think led to some really interesting characters. Even the Dame, a performer, is like, I have a reason I am venturing forth into danger.
Cool. It's one of those fun things of can't see anybody's faces, so I don't know if anybody is looking to speak. But does anyone have a favorite moment of this extremely intricate campaign so far?
Chain Lightning is. It felt like a little victory every time, even if the fight had another 2-3 rounds to go, getting 5 or 6 good rolls with the Chain Lightning.
Yeah, when it works out.
Yeah, it's over. The holiday special where we tried out a viewer's homebrew, I believe. Death Metal Bard, right, Cody?
Correct. He made a winter themed holiday set of monsters and with matching tokens.
Yes, and that's the first time that we ruled that within a Chain Lightning sequence, you could target the same target as long as you managed to target a different target in between. That made my night.
Some of my favorite moments have been in moments of, you guys are crossing this big area, you guys are traveling. What happens? How do you do it? You know, what goes on? Kind of the wacky things that sort of pop out of those kind of character exposition moments of like, we try to cross a river, but our wagon loses a wheel. How do we deal with that?
Before we end up on a cruise.
Or I was going to say the cruise montage. Yes, I think that kind of stands out in my brain as like one of my top moments. We were in Shadowport and we needed to cross, we were going to Shadowport, right?
You were going to Shadowport from Santa Cora.
Right. So how are we going to get across? Well, let's hop on this cruise boat and live life large on our way to Shadowport. You know, what did your characters do while you were there? I think I talked about going to like Callie went to a comedy show, you know, and Callie didn't have any money because I wasn't tracking my money very well. And so Leanne had to pay for me to get on board and
still need to pay me back.
Lucien had to share, he had to sleep on the floor and like share a closet with like his dog because he snuck on the boat. He didn't want to pay, so he snuck on the boat.
He claims he was blind.
Yeah, no, to get his dog on the boat, he said he was blind and it was a guide dog.
Nobody forget that Raza bought the tickets for the round, right? Like
it was an excursion or extra.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went on excursions. Leanne went to like a Coliseum like gladiator fight excursion. And it was just like that kind of wacky stuff where it's just like us having fun within the technically within the confines of the rules of the game. that really stand out for me.
Yeah, I guess on a similar note, I think my favorite thing was we had a couple of sessions where we really fleshed out the legal system of Shadowport, where basically we were like struggling with this idea of like, okay, so this is a city of thieves. Like, this is like the city for the Prince of Shadows. How do you make a legal system while also allowing for this kind of theft that isn't just a complete cesspool? And so we ended up with this really cool legal system where basically as long as you declared that you were going to steal something in advance and like you had a confirmed receipt that like they had been warned, it was a legal theft. You couldn't actually be arrested for it. And fleshing that out and argue and like having these like intense little legal arguments back and forth about it and about the implications of that, that was really, really fun.
I love when it happens in sort of any game, but I feel like 13th Age, especially with montages and the amount of ability for players to input that kind of things in the world, I love how often that kind of thing comes up in my 13th Age games.
It's a pretty bold design when you look at it in the field of gameplay mechanics present in other sort of similar fantasy super sort of genre. Because a lot of the times in these stories where you want to centralize the you know the narrative camera, the lens right on the player characters, you don't want to trivialize what they're doing with their time necessarily. Like every moment feels like it has to be a moment of character development, but these sort of montages are sort of nice homages to the way that these relationships develop in real life and in long form storytelling like TV series, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really elegant when you get down to it.
Have you guys looked at the investigation montages that were developed in the Crown of Axis? Have you used
any Crown of Access out yet?
Yeah, the little PDF. I believe
I have not had a chance to read it. Then I at some point I said I can't. This campaign needs to end eventually. I stopped reading new books. So I wouldn't get new ideas.
So Wade put together, as opposed to kind of even the Gumshoe or Call of Cthulhu sort of investigative mechanic, where it's like, well, you have to be in this spot to like find something. He turned investigations into a montage. So if a player goes, well, I really want to find out who's behind, you know, this Arcano dust that's coming in to Newport. Okay, well, who do you go talk to? Who would you know that would have this information? And so you use the same rules for the journey montage, but you use it, the players get to decide who would have the clues that would then come together and lead them to the next scene.
Oh,
which is just awesome.
Read those rules.
Yeah, it's just awesome. Clever.
I think it says a lot about the system as a whole and how story and character driven it is, which is one of the things that I have come to love so much about it. And it says a lot about our DM who allowed us to, in a montage, get on a cruise ship and, you know, have all of these shenanigans. So I think it, you know, it reflects well on Cody as a DM too, to kind of just let us have fun and do our thing in these montages, even though
that's why you play games, right? To have fun.
Exactly. Because I've definitely been in other games where that is like not the case. People are just like here to play the game, follow the rules and roll some dice. So it really, it enhances the experience for the player.
when you're playing in a campaign where one of your party members is a lizard from a sci-fi realm who transported to your world with a talking axe, I don't know if I really should say no to you hopping on a cruise ship.
Okay. But realistically, it's the micro environment, right? Like, it's, I don't want to say it's a it's the paper napkin, right, of storytelling. But it is, right? Everybody jots down their idea for the scene happens, and you move on. And it's really beautiful because it's a quick way to set precedent without hours and hours of prep, which is every GM's enemy, the self, right? Letting the players sort of take on that pressure and offload all of that. And, you know, it's nice for somebody who runs games to play 13th Age because you have a lot of input and you get to sort of help your friend out.
At the same time, it has a framework. It has a rules engine such that that input isn't boundless and internal. I've played some, you know, note card systems where it's like, oh, you literally just say what happens. It's like, that's a little too much creative input, right? Like,
So I think it sounds like after 3 years, you guys, I mean, obviously, if you've lasted 3 years or almost 3 years in this game, that you seem to like it. And it seems you have a mix kind of experienced and new players and role playing. What are your thoughts on 13th Age as a game system? You covered some of it, but do you have any thoughts plus or minus about it?
Yeah, I think coalescing some of the things that Cody and Seb were saying, I think one of the really elegant things about 13th Age is it still has a little bit of crunch to it, but it's much more collaborative than a lot of other games that we talk about being, you know, crunchy and like having a strong rule set. There is like some of the world building and the plot and some of that, like some of the onus of creating that is placed on the players. And it is this idea of together we are telling a heroic story instead of just, hey, the GM is telling us a story and we're writing our own dialogue. It's no, you're part of the plot. And I think that's, and it's really elegantly handled. And I really do appreciate that. I think it hits a really nice middle ground.
I agree. I think 13th Age makes the fun parts of tabletop so much more fun, and the less fun parts, the rules, and in my opinion, combat, which is my least favorite, and Cody can attest to this. I kind of sometimes check out during combat sometimes. But, you know, having elements that make combat a little faster and a little more smoother, like, you know, having your icon relationship points to be able to just say, nope, I want to kill all five of those mooks at the same time, really keeps combat from like slugging on forever. Because I've been in some, you know, fifth edition games where we are literally in combat for hours. And that's just not fun for me. So being able to still think creatively and not have to always be, you know, nose in the books trying to figure out which spell works best is definitely really nice as well.
Mooks in general are beautiful. I think every system should have mooks.
Oh yeah,
I agree. I agree tenfold.
Go ahead, pal.
My quick tidbit here. 13th Age, I think one of my favorite aspects of the system is honestly the fact of how flexible it is. Like a commander by default, you will support other people. I should use a different class. I'm going to talk about a paladin instead. One of the things is we did a couple one shots to test out the system. And one of the things I appreciate is despite the fact of how the spells and your attacks work, you can generally reflavor and recontextualize the approach of your attacks while still having the same mechanical effects. That really lets you make your character feel unique while still being the same paladin as anyone else, for example. And I think that's one of the big things I appreciate about it. And also the escalation die. Escalation die really helps mitigate the dragging on of battles.
Mm-hmm.
and the way the recovery system works helps consolidate not needing a dedicated healer as much, as well as dealing with issues such as someone having 50 healing potions on them and never going down because they just keep bringing people from zero HP up. All right, that's all my thoughts.
Yeah, I think 13th Age is very accessible, is one of its big pro points. We have a lot of new players at this table, and the fact that 13th Age is mostly, like, it has a lot of interesting exceptions to the rules, but it tells you that in natural text. You read what the monster does, you read what your power does, and it makes sense in the context of that. You don't have to go reference a book or tables or charts. You just play the game and you use natural language to understand and play the game. I think that just makes it inherently accessible for players to pick up and go. And, you know, I love Kitty, but, like, sometimes she forgets the rules, but, like, they're there for her, right? Like, and so she doesn't get lost most of the time. And people always joke about how, like, your ninth 5e character is, like, you know, this really interesting character, but the first one's just, like, a boring human fighter. And I'm really proud that, like, even new players arrive at such interesting, diverse characters just because the system pushed them in that direction.
Okay. I think I'm ready to unload. So if somebody were to ask me what 13th Age was, and they had, you know, they'd never played it, I would tell them that it's not a grid-based game. It's totally best served in theater of the mind. It is, because the rules don't reference distances in any concrete terms, if I'm not mistaken. And periods of time are also not greatly detailed. I don't believe that the tools and the inventories of characters are of great importance either, due to a lot of the actual mechanics. It is a game system where you are going to, whether it is your interest or not, tell a story about the character you're playing. And that seems kind of like duh whenever you consider the genre of role-playing games. But a lot of the times role-playing games are a story about what happens to this character and what this character does. But you, in 13th Age, you tell a story about the character. You learn about the character. In that vein, it is incredibly malleable. You can replace all of your icons. You can pare down your icons, tell a story about 1, 2, 3, add a couple more icons. Why not? You can play with any map you want. I don't think it matters. You can make your own setting top to bottom. And as long as you're relatively close to the initial stirrings of fantasy, you're going to find a modicum of support in 13th Age. I would not go to great efforts to homebrew it. I think the system stands best on its own, and I think the setting is really where the GM's playground is. The characters, you know, the magic items and stuff like that, yes. But the great sort of trend of making character classes and subclasses, that's left behind whenever you approach 13th Age. The story is where you live when you play the game. I have had my own sort of knocks with the game, trying to do my own sci-fi version of it, and find that it works as long as you're willing to reskin everything. There's a lot of effort to make the player actions sort of these cinematic tropes, such that you're inspired in this narrative sense without needing this miniature grid in front of you to sort of stay engaged. These things like clubbing specifically with your tail as an abomination. That's third party, though. The actual mechanics of singing a song, right? You're rolling a die to see if you're staying on cue. It's the tiny details where the rules designers showed a lot of love that sort of make it hard to pry the system away from the fantastical setting. And so you can do whatever you want to the elements that are there. To wholesale try to modify that, just not where the game is best served. A solid foundation. It's beautiful in what it is. Play 13th Age for 13th Age, and nothing more, nothing less, I think.
I had a lot of fun with the sci-fi one, just saying.
I struggled.
I've been trying to hack it to a superhero set.
It's a lot of work.
It is.
I don't know if you can tell. It's something that I sort of measure in a lot of systems is whether you can separate the system from the setting. 13th Age, if you do that, you're losing a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's always good hearing other people's perspective on 13th Age, right? I mean, we've been a 13th Age focused podcast for a number of years, and you know, getting other people onto the show and kind of asking them, you know, what do you think about 13th Age? It was nice being able to hear all of your guys' perspectives and just realize, you know, the things that you've mentioned that have been, you know, things that are either when you're trying to describe what is 13th Age, what it is, or the things that have stood out in your memory that kind of define 13th Age. You know, it's the stuff that we've talked about a lot on, and it just really shows the fact that you guys have been playing this for so long. But when you think about all of the different aspects of 13th Age, and we've talked about a lot of them, if you could maybe succinctly pull out, you know, this is my favorite part of 13th Age, what would it be?
The icons and the one unique thing, for sure. I think it creates a lot of avenues for both, like, the larger plot of your game and just, like, your character's growth and development, which is what hooks me into a game and wants, you know, keeps me coming back for more, you know? So I think, for me, very simple, very easy. The one unique thing and the icons.
I also really, really like the icons. I think it's such a beautiful way of organizing your world. And it's something that I even sort of take with me when I go and I read other settings and stuff. I'm like, okay, so who's the icon here? Like, who are we talking about? Who's the head honcho? Another thing, and so this is a little bit, I've not something that you necessarily get strictly as a player, but I really, really love how it's written. The 13th Age books are genuinely one of the best rule books to just sit down and read that I've encountered. A lot of them can be really dry and obtuse, but like the 13th Age rule books are genuinely fun to read and very, like, accessible. You don't have to, you know, okay, I got to get my glasses on and get ready to take notes. It's just, all right, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to read a book.
I'm going to say it to the icons because they're written specifically to be interacted with. You could play 20 levels of D&D and never actually see Tiamat in person, right? If you want, the book sort of encourages you to just get your mission straight from the Archmage at level 3 and get going, and I love that.
I like the design of monsters. As a GM, it makes it really easy to set up a new monster. They're really easy to run. They don't have entire complex character sheets that you have to manage. It's just, all right, they attack, and often they have automatic abilities, almost a limited AI built in, because it's like, oh, on a natural even hit, they do this. I don't have to be like, oh, no, I'm punishing this player by activating their special move. They activate their special move all on their own. They're their own little monsters.
That was an amazing kind of design revelation for me as a GM to just see how they basically automated. I came from 13th Age from 4th edition D&D, which was a completely different beast when it came to running monsters. And yeah, I love the monster design in 13th Age.
I was just going to say, it's a shame we turned our cameras off because I was nodding along to a lot of these. What do I love about 13th Age? What do I find intriguing about it? I was like, oh yeah, no, totally that. Yeah, that too. So yeah, it's great to hear, you know, your own thoughts echoed among the community, and just see why people love 13th Age so much.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. Well, when, I know we mentioned that you're streaming on the Pelgrim Twitch channel, when can people find your show?
If you would like to watch the Splitting Dragon Empire, as we call our stream, you can find us on twitch.tv/Pelgrim Press every Monday from 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Central Time.
Awesome. Do any of you want to share where people can find or follow you online?
Well, if you go to the Splitting Dragon Empire Discord, you can find all of us there.
That's true. We do have a Discord where we keep lose track of what's been going on and offer people opportunities to talk with us, make pitches. Oftentimes we'll have people on as guests for the stream. So that's the best place to reach us.
I believe our campaign is also public on Konka. Is that correct, Cody?
That's true.
I have been keeping a very detailed Konka record of our campaign pretty much since the beginning. And, you know, there's a lot of information in here, some of which I definitely don't remember putting in here, but it's all there. And I believe it's also linked in our Discord server as well.
That's correct. And speaking of guests, the wonderful folk at Iconic have agreed to come on as our largest guests ever, just in terms of number of people. Wow. I don't know what we'll do yet, but we will have a very large party session, and we will stream it live. And hopefully it will, we'll even get through a few rounds of combat with this many people.
Can I play as Lario? Can I come back as Lario for that?
You can come back as Lario.
I'll make time in my schedule. I'll tell my manager I'm coming in late the next day.
Well, we're looking
for Crusader's revenge.
Oh, the Crusader has already gotten revenge so many times. No more, please. Yeah, please, I'm bruised and battered.
I was already embarrassed already.
Well, guys, thank you all for taking time out to come on the show. We're, you know, anything we can do to help get 13 page in front of more people is kind of our jam. So we appreciate you just coming on and talking about your campaign, your characters, and sharing what you love about 13 page.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to playing some 13 page with all of you in the near future.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast. Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.